we persevere at just temporary circumstances. The next time of the end of the circumstance comes in the second. When we start with a we can start taking second members and also the ministry and the department for understanding the question to the schedule of the meeting. So we want to work together for the particular members to be present. I think we will be and hoping that today we'll then be able to interact in areas that we think that they are very important, because the subject of today, among other things, a process that is to ensure that the health sector through the Office of the Minister, the social conditions of our people in the health sector are changed. And I think as members of the legislative arm of the state, we are confident with all the challenges that is going to happen. It has always been my belief and it has always been my concern that when we interact with the subject, with the health sector, we interact with it as if there is never a history. And there is a history. We can never be afraid or apologetic about that, but this sector is one of the sectors that has a history, and that the approach of this kind is precisely to address that history. And I'm not implying that everything is, when things are not running right, we must not say that. But we must say that we must think the context of understanding that there is history. And it is that history that is going, obviously we are not always going to be looking at our beds, being stuck in history, but it is that history that is going to make us to be dedicated, to be focused in ensuring that it is corrected and we move forward. So I just wanted to I thought this morning that it is important that we really at least at times, in fact not at times, every time we remind ourselves that in whatever is being, in whatever program, in whatever project, in whatever activity that the Department of Health is putting forth or ensuring that it is enhanced, it is because it is addressing a particular legacy and history within the health sector. And we want to commend the Department of Health through the Minister. I saw it's only that I missed the Minister in those provinces that would change the program of the MaConnect, which is one of the most powerful programs in the history of this country in the health sector. And we want to commend the Department and the Minister in ensuring that program is a program that is understood by everybody, from ourselves right to the ordinary person on the ground. Having said that, honourable members, those were my opening remarks. We will deal with the introduction. Benefit of those that may come in for the first time. House rules are as follows. We're going to introduce ourselves using mics. Everybody is going to do that. You must tell us who you are, where you are coming from. Phones are not answered while the committee is in session. Unfortunately, guests are not allowed to ask questions. They will only ask questions at a particular time, but not in the session. And no interaction of guests in whatever way in the process of the sessions of the committee. Having said that, I will start from the side. I'm Lindy Rakunjwa, I'm the chair of the portfolio Compton Health, and on my left side is Ms. Majilama, who is the secretary of the Committee of Health. On my right, far right, Mr. Lukuhle Mbane, who's the content advisor. Can they please indicate so that people who are coming for the first time they see them? Next to her is Ms. Lalu, who is our media person attached to this committee. Next to her is Moses, who's part of the research. And next to him is Mr. Zubair, who is also in the research committee. At the extreme left there, my lady with the white shirt is Ms. Selina, who is the secretary attached to the office of the chair. I think that is, Then I will, the process is going to be as follows. Honorable members are going to introduce themselves. The department will do that. The ministry will do that. And then it will then be our guest that has visited us today. Remember that you use the mic nearer to you in telling us who you are. Over to honorable members.
Good morning. My name is Alman Jay. I'm a member of parliament and a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tumele Musala, and I'm a member of the committee.
Dumelang ka ofela ke ntate Maishela ke loloko la komiti ya botlhabophelo.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Minister, and all colleagues. There's an AMK team, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. I am Esbani Zuma, a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mansa Francis Ndaba. I'm a member of the committee.
Honorable Minister, it's you.
Yes, I'll allow my officials to also to introduce themselves. I'm Aaron Mugari, the Minister of Health.
My name is Mansa Pele, I'm using the National Department of Health.
Good morning.
I'm DG for Health Regulation and Compliance.
Good morning, Chair, Minister, Honourable Members and Guests. I'm Jeanette Hunter. I'm the DG for Primary Health Care.
Good morning. I am Makona Chulari, Technical Specialist on NHS.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Cindy is the Solar Director of the Secretary General.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Maureen Kosi, and I am responsible for the management of the condition of grants in the National Department of Health.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Solar, and I'm responsible for Parliament's Secretary General.
My name is Joe Khatna, Office of Manishma.
It's over to you, our guests.
I'll wait a little for all the presentation.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sabu Mugwani. I'm a media.
Good morning, I'm Shamal Khan from Business Day and Financial Mail.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jackson Burrow from PNG.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher and I'm from Sydney.
Good morning, I'm Shalari from Merengali.
Good morning, members of the staff. My name is Shalari and I'm from the Federation.
Before that, let's check my name in the corner. Sorry.
I'm
getting four newspapers.
Good morning, I'm Dean Malkus and I'm a research intern at CPLO, the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Good morning, Justin Kelly from the Office of the
Deputy President. Good morning, I'm
morning, everyone. I'm Yashin from the DA's media office.
Morning, I'm Yashin from the media office.
Thank you, honorable members and commissioners and my guests. We have got two appointees. Honorable Mashalina, who's attending on Sundays. Honorable Skippers, who's not well. Honorable James, who's on another committee. Honorable James, the other James from FCB. And Honorable Zornick, who will be running it. Those are our apologies. I think our agenda item is a presentation by the Minister of Health on the HI pilot site. We will hand over to the Minister with the understanding that all honorable members do have the document that was circulated early in the week and sometimes earlier, but it will be more comprehensive today.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. May I also ask you for the indulgence. The document you received earlier in the week was prepared by the DG. As you can see, she's not with us. She indisposed very well. She took to Cape Town for other meetings. She couldn't fly back to Victoria because of illness. She's still around Cape Town, but I'm able to attend. Now, I prepared another document based on that first one because I have to prepare it in such a way that I will understand it. It's always critical to present some of this document. So I will endorse members of the committee that I have amended and given a new document this morning, which will follow this. It's just the arrangement of things in the way I understand that they take more things, so it's not really clear departure from the first one. So the one I've just given out has this map of the pilot, whereas the previous one that we had that line. Can we follow that one? Yes. Obviously, there is a new cross-reference, but I would like to present only this one because I understand that.
Before that, Honorable Minister, I don't think that can be an issue. The only thing is that do members have the document that you have sent?
Approach.
If everybody has got that, it's fine. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Yes.
Before Honorable Minister, just somebody who's looking at a hand, I didn't see that guests don't go that in the meeting. And I see that news before is looking at a hand. A lady that can see whom I don't know who she is has also done that. Can you go to social friends? You might use the mic, please.
I'm the manager. Thank you for the interruption. And it's like summer. Thank you.
If there are any copies that are available, can we? As Minister is asking to ask you, maybe.
Chairperson, as you know, we took a decision somewhere in 2010 about the journey to implement the whole concept of HI. And we said it would take 14 years to implement when we got it. And we took a decision that would be given, it being a very new concept, just to move around the country as we were implementing an HI. We then chose what we call pilot district. And introducing them, we took into consideration a number of factors. Number one, that there is gross inequality in politics and business in South Africa. This fact was made known by the Alma Ata Declaration of the United Nations of the World Organization. Disparity between countries and among countries themselves. So we chose the pilot districts by making them. Let those which are the poorest come in, let those which are very rich come in, let those with the high spending come in, the low disadvantage, let those who are very badly managed come in, let those who are extremely well managed, so that you are able to compare. Otherwise, we said, if you pilot by fishing, the best fish is. When he dwells, we say he's waiting on realizing that because the fish is good. If we pilot by fishing only poor fish, when he fails, we'll also get confused. So we did a mixture. That's why among the fish, there's one metal, which is the Swahili metal. There is the parent district, which is the Ohar Kambo. There is the smallest in terms of population, but the biggest in terms of district, of geography, which is district Kafen. There's Umudu, who is in this end, one of the worst hit by HIV AIDS pandemic, etc., etc. So there is quite a mixture. So we then have different districts. Sometimes we mention 11 districts because in end, did act as if they can put up an extra district, seeing that you are aware that while there are 52 districts in the country, many populations have got 5 or 6, that is the only one who has got 11 out of that 52, the highest number. So they sort of wanted to add, and so sometimes there's an 11th one, which we agree we might help them if the need arises. So don't be confused that at times you talk about 11 districts at other. Now, the next question is, what actually are we piloting? If we want this whole issue of NHI to provide good quality health care to all the citizens of the country, regardless of their socio-economic status, what is that we are going to pilot? As you can see on that slide, we put up 4 things and say, let's try to see if we can improve the health care system through those 4 things. The best practice is, issue of infrastructure development and maintenance, because you are aware we do have a big problem on this. Member in that position should be aware of that. Secondly, we thought as far as human resources are concerned, we are aware that most of the human resources of health in the country, by and large, 80% is in the private sector, 16% of the population, and 20% only in the public sector, feeding 84% of the population. So we said, at the first step, how do we tap into the capacity of the private sector? And we said our first step is the contracting of GPs to work in public clinics. We specifically said public clinics, services. Because in NHI, we believe and we still believe, and when the policy document comes out, we see very clearly that primary healthcare must be the heartbeat of the healthcare system. The present healthcare system, which starts at the tertiary level, it's not acceptable, it's not what is practiced around health in many parts of the world, where you just start your treatment or whatever, at the tertiary. It has to start at primary healthcare level, meaning the prevention of disease, promotion of health, but when you are actually sick, looking for care, it must start at the primary healthcare facilities, which are clinics. But generally, clinics are shunned by doctors, and generally by staff. You don't usually find lots of staff in clinics. People believe whatever staff and treatment, anything you have, always put it there in the hospital, leave the clinic empty. But then, how do you expect the population to go there? So he said, one of our first steps is to see how do we make sure that when patients go to clinic, they can also find the doctor. That's why we spoke about contracting of GPs. The third was to make life our whole view about primary health care. Can we re-engineer the healthcare system? And we said, it's not new chairperson, that healthcare system must be based on primary health care. This was said in 1994. But the question is, what did we do in practice to make sure that we do accept primary health care, the cornerstone of the healthcare system? So we said, let me engineer it, and we identified 3 streams through which it will be engineered. The first one, school health program. Our argument was that you could serve the education at school on any level. What does that mean? Are we waiting for them to get sick and start going to teach our hospitals at high expenses? Can we go there at school and find them there and understand them? What are their ailments? What can we do to stop those ailments? How do we promote health among them? So that's why we came with it. School health as one of the cornerstones of primary health care. The other one is about what is primary health care agency. Can you have primary health care workers inside the municipal ward? When the NDP, National Development Plan, was being prepared, There were actually meetings that by 20 days we might have 1 million primary healthcare workers all around the villages and streets and townships in South Africa. Only that it became something that very difficult and somehow not possible to achieve 11 million. And I did note the NDC, the commissioner, that India still has doing very well, but still has 800,000 primary healthcare workers. So for South Africa to reach a million with our population, it's not something that can easily happen. But I'm just trying to emphasize the importance of this, that in every municipality where there must be primary healthcare workers. The third one, the district specialist, that much as we say we must target primary healthcare level, one of the problems in South Africa is that in far rural areas, people will always, women will always take gynecologists when they're complicated, meaning when it's already too late. Can we send specialists down there in the district to help, not only by reaching this aware, but by actually coordinating, making sure that protocols are followed, making sure that they train the young doctors and young nurses, making sure that they prepare the primary healthcare system to be in contact with the public healthcare system. The fourth was what we generally call the quality of healthcare services. When you go to the NDP, you realize that it's also one of the things that the system has achieved by 2020. Efficiency, effectiveness, quality, and equity of the healthcare system. But here we call it quality of the healthcare system. And we look at Cisco standards. There will be many standards that refer to quality, but we basically look at Cisco standards. The cleanliness of the hospital, institution, safety and security of staff and patients, attitude of staff, infection control, long use and drugs come out. And we said, okay, let's go out and see if we can improve the healthcare system and business. So I remember the pilot thing is to lay the foundation of NHI. Many people believe pilot is NHI itself. It's to lay the foundation really to prepare for this NHI, which is going to be a massive effect. So these are the things that we have to do in the pilot district, in the 10 pilot district to see. Now, let's come to infrastructure. We did not just wake up on this issue of infrastructure. We took our advice from a meeting that was called by the World Health Organization in Tunisia in 2012. A meeting called by the national director of the World Health Organization, Dr. Sambu, who called ministers of finance and ministers of health in Africa to come and understand the whole concept of universal health coverage, which we call NHI. And Dr. Sambu said he's proposing four mega trusts that will make this a reality on the African continent. After examining what happened on the African continent for a long time, perhaps starting with Kwame Nkrumah's Ghana in 1967, when he declared capital in free and were problems, followed by Agostinho Neto's Angola in 1925, when he declared capital in free, followed by our own icon, Peter Agha Nelson Mandela, in 1996, when he declared free health for pregnant mothers and young children. We examined those issues under the World Health to find out what their weaknesses. And we discovered that what has been lacking on the African continent. And Chairperson, this issue came back again. This was critical. It came back again at the World Organization in the advent of Ebola. What made Africa so vulnerable? And we discovered that these things are related. That unless Africa goes down to further strengthen capacities of public health, I'm reading there now, and that's why it's been raised. First, strengthening the capacity of public health infrastructure to provide effective, safe, and quality services. And then that infrastructure will include staffing. You must look at staffing, you must look at buildings, you must look at technology, you must look at utilities such as power and water supply, you must look at waste management, transport and communication, you must look at financing, investment, maintenance, and recurring costs. This is what was said. Health infrastructure includes public investment. The government will have to explore innovative ways of financing resources of the private sector, NGOs, and communities. This was the basic. In other words, it was saying, if this whole concept of universal health coverage, which exists in many countries, like region in the form of NHL, the Scandinavian countries. Africa was not countries that where they are. It matters here. Only as if you have to go to Europe and mention these things, they will be confused because there don't be enough cases to ever be run with someone that's mentioned. But if you characterize Africa, and the emphasis is that we must have there. So, following this in the Department of Health, we went to the drawing board and said, how do we put this, as Dr. Kampwe said, as we agree as ministers of health and finance, how do we start putting this on the table and start raising money? That's why we came across the concept of an IDP. What should the refugees look like in South Africa? For us to be satisfied that it meets the quality that has been described here in red. What must it be like? What must the buildings look like? But firstly, what do they look like now? What is missing in our healthcare infrastructure? So since that time, since 2012, then we then sent our engineer to all the 10 islands and asked them to visit every structure that is called a health structure. That means clinics and hospitals and shared infrastructure, looking at this as a mirror. Start from the ceiling, the walls, etc. Just like they record and tell us what it is like. All that is very complex work. It fills volumes and volumes of engineering documents. But in short, just to make it easy for you, they decided that they are going to color code those areas that are very red, they put them in red. Those that need a lot of work, they put them in amber, and those that are just need routine maintenance, they put them in green. And so I can't show you all the things. I just use four different things, just as an example. As you can see, this is a very big thing. On the right are the names of the things, the few things that we've been put there. Even in them, I'm not using all the names, but I'm just showing this particular things. So the areas that are red, the areas that are green, the areas that are amber. As you can see, it shows that there is a massive maintenance work that is done in this area because there are a lot of amber. This is healthy balance between Mpumalanga and Limpopo. There is a bit more green, but there are also a lot of red. This is Thabo Mokonyane in the state, which is mostly green. Our discovery there was that in Thabo Mokonyane, the biggest problem is that they have got small clinics. And I've seen members give me questions about this. Most of the clinics in the former part are very small. Even if the clinic looks small, it will never meet the needs of the population. My own theory is that because part of the small homeland, they were building for their population, but now too big to be inhabited. So that green color there, showing that most of the buildings might be in which they it relates the fact that they are very small. If you have to meet not in clinic committee there, and communities, as I mentioned, they are biggest complaint. Can you build that to be a clinic? Can you build that to be a clinic? So that's coming to the Yana. This is all happening in the same city. You don't have to be a scientist or an engineer to understand what's happening there. Almost everything is ready. It means there's absolute relaxation, no maintenance, etc., etc. When you talk about these three chapters, and we realize that both them and Borat Kambo were independent women, they were not supposed to be part of South Africa and only Africa. You wouldn't be surprised when you see that. So, this basically is what we have to deal with. Using this method, we discovered that in Borat Kambo, for instance, three of their hospitals, you can't even renovate or refurbish. You have to do it from the beginning, they are completely finished, they have to do that. Any of their needs, same thing. When you go to Westland, we found also the same thing. Three of their hospitals are completely dilapidated, training needs start to be seen. Five of their units. And the rest needs a lot of mega maintenance and repair. So we did that, and I had slides about the medicine, Swan. We took the two hospitals in Swan, and we found that all of them also, even if they are really rich medicine, they do need a lot of work and we do see them here. Now, we started this problem. We went to Treasury. Part of the problem that the country faced with addiction is whether you, it doesn't matter in which province, if you meet my agencies, it doesn't matter in which province they found themselves. So tell you the problem between the health departments and public ways, in terms of maintenance of structures, buildings, etc. I'm sure members will know that this matter has been discussed for the past 2 years. So we said because of this, when the secretary asked for funds for testing time, can we in the province do this way, on our own specific way, not following what we've been doing for the past 21 years, where you just keep mind, public ways, and buildings, all that, when you know really well that most of the time, so in the Eastern Cape, what needs to be the change for our school is 1, 2, 3 to make them an ID. Then the question is, yes, those, I'm just showing you the things where they are situated. I'm just showing you the way that has been done. In terms of dividing the phase, that's phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, etc., etc. We are just showing that. Now, we have to see 10%. If all of you here, I want to tell you that the finish and please use public health facilities, start taking it. For you not to start questioning me, what should that thing look like? We have to have that definition. And that's when we define the liability. We have to have an architectural design of such a thing. And this is the design. We set for the thing to be ideal. And encourage members of the population to change the NHI. Please go to the clinic, don't start at the hospitals. We came with that architectural design and said, we will be successful assembly. How is it going to work? Every new clinic which you build must look like this. And it's not just answer. We brought together specialists in all the fields. In clinical medicine, guidance, psychiatry, specialists, and other. In a clinic, must have the disease profile of the country. What must we have? What kinds of rules must we have? Rules to do what? What type of functions must we perform? And we say with this desire. Which means any new clinic that is built must look like that. But it also means if you maintain a clinic, if you refurbish a clinic, you take this desire and look at the clinic yourself in terms of the desire. And I think this must look like this. This one looks like that. It means we must change this portion, we must add that, you know, so that this becomes our behavior and our children, whatever we're doing or building. And so this is our existing design. And we are just showing construction. Unfortunately, it is already August. This slide, as you can see, we prepared some time back because we're still showing construction starting this July. Most and then progress was 15% around 0 in Alaska. Was built to start, but I'm just showing you the things in OR Tango which have already been built in terms of this idealism model to prepare for any time. And just showing you, because sometimes when you come to Parliament and tell people that things are happening, it's just you, that's what I need to take photos to show that I'm actually talking about something that they're saying. All that work you are seeing there, all that construction work is in terms of structure of ideal model, which will also involve in equipment, obviously. Now you go to Rembrandt District. In Rembrandt, we must do the 859 clinics, as you can see, it shows 150 clinics there, HHs, hospitals, etc., and this is where they are situated. And we divided them into sub-districts as such. And these are most of the things. When you see a red star, it means that structure needs to be totally replaced. It's no longer renovated. It's just beyond repair. But this is all the numbers of the things. But we also said, because we wanted to contract for GPs, many GPs, when we ask for this work of contracting, as I told you, that we wanted doctors to report to clinics, not to hospitals. It's not a new thing, Chairperson, for doctors who live in private practice to help work for the day. They were doing it in the form of patients, but they mostly be in hospitals. And we believe that arrangement doesn't help the health system. If they go to clinic and see the population there, they will help to decongest hospitals. So, but most doctors are not in. They complain that no, the clinic have got nothing, there's no space. But our second fear was that if you send a doctor to a clinic, that clinic becomes a first clinic. The next is my specialist in human health. They might stop immunizing. Simple cause of immunization might stop. Simple process of family cleaning might stop. Single process of weighing children, achieving women and cancer might stop. And they'll concentrate on children type of skin and doctor. And that whole thing will be organized. So we said if we're going to be sending doctors to this age, they want a special group of their own. And allow the next to do what they routinely do when they come to the that's why we came this concept of doctors consulting rooms. And 106 of them were completed all on behalf by DTSA, the development board of South Africa. Each one of them had four consulting rooms. At the moment, we are busy constructing on our own as a department. In other words, it's no longer done by DTSA. 61 of them, and these ones are bigger, they've got six consulting rooms. They are not constructed in the conventional method. That's why I want to show you how we made the slab there and how we put up that structure and actually last for a period of 6 years. That structure on the extreme high is in addition to the finish. The finish is on the left. That is the structure where the GP agrees on that. We have a few divisions and leave the message on the left structure to continue with the everyday work of running the team. So that, as you can see, that is the nature of that team. Team of work, it means those doctors on that room are already completed. That one is in carbon food dynamics in the 50s. It's a 3-2-3 system, a high, the similarity. We are showing the same doctors on that room, and that is also in the 50s, open and food and bossing. We are just showing in the doctors on that room the type of the manner in which the rooms must appear, which seems visually will not necessarily have this type of thing. They must all be just so that the doctor will be happy, that everything they need to start seeing patients will actually have. So having done that, we started this process of contacting GPs, which I told you did not work very well. There are three options that were following. Direct contact through the National Department of Health, which to be very, very slow. Then, putting a service provider, that means someone whose job will be to recruit the GPs, pay them salaries, and come and bring from us, so that they do it on a full-time basis. This method is going to be very successful, because since we started this, the work of contracting GPs will be much faster. Then there's a method that is used in the Western Sea, which we are also looking at. Which is being used in the Western Sea, where they are, that they found that doctors generally used to go in Western Sea. They just have people in the hospital. And maybe it's because of part of their training. So they said it works better if you allow the doctors hired by the state to be the ones who go in the clinic. And let the ones who are GP to bring them in the hospital, because that's where they are. In other words, it's just dealing with human psychology. I personally won't see why I'm at the frequency in the city, but generally doctors who exist. I attended many meetings where if they don't exist where they exist where in something that is older. For instance, if you contract doctors in Swahili, even if they are there, they would like to work in the same hospital itself. In the surrounding place that informs one, it would be very distracted. But I believe that's not only in medicine. Sometimes all the skilled people, whether you're talking of teachers, of nurses, or lawyers, the chance of going in a rural area are always very difficult. So we are looking at all these methods, which one can help us. But when we started, it was this direct contact in the very soon. And we are just trying to show the number of contracted GPs there. Who are waiting as of the 31st of March 2015, and we are seeing the numbers there. As you can see, in all that in this project, I did there already about 3 times to try and address GPs, and it's just illegal even to invite them to come to a meeting in the center of the data and address them and talk about them. And most of the time, I was being successful. There's always one reason or the other why they keep up or they do well. Organized. But we are also showing you the status of GP contracting when we compare March 2014 versus March 2015 after we have made use of a service provider. The service provider entities is the foundation for professional development. This is the foundation that is being set up by the state also to help in further development in training. We said before that with that professional development, they can also be one to help us. And let's just see the dramatic improvement on that. So I'm just using the explanation again about the numbers, how we put up an independent service provider, how we contract, service contracting, only in November 2014, how the number of GPs could increase twofold from November until now, just after using that method of professional development. But we are also showing that because of that method. In OR, that has been showing zero all the time. In August this year, there are already 30 GPs that are contracted, whereas all the time it was showing 0, 0, 0 or 1, because then the service provider is working very well on them. Then we move to the engineering of the primary health care. How do we engineer primary health care? Chairperson, as far as I'm concerned, whether South African health care system improves for the better, the health of this population will depend high and large on how we as the population that the whole issue of primary health care, whether we reject it as a method that is so suitable for our health care system or not. I'm saying this chairperson because the general task now is clearly health care. It's not only South Africa that will have this problem. When Dr. Margaret Chan, the Director General of the World Organization, was addressing the World Health Assembly in 2012 about this issue, she said there are several structural problems of healthcare around the world. And among them, she mentioned this issue of curative healthcare. That's one of the seven structural problems that is created by the way high. The world doesn't respect it. That's why you find a country like Cuba, which is well known around the world, that each primary health care is the most advanced. But we just refuse to recognize that in many of our utterances, many of our postures, we fail to recognize that. Even if the World Organization recognizes that very much, but generally, around the world, we ignore that fact. Last month, when it was announced that Cuba became the first country in the world that eradicated mother-to-child transmission of HIV, it's never been international news. It's not a big thing to eradicate mother-to-child transmission. The big thing is somebody found the cure. Let them just feed them or fix them. That's what we look at around the world. The CEO of the World Diabetes Foundation, the World Diabetes Federation, put it in more simpler and intelligent terms than I could ever put it. He said, look at diabetes, which is exploding around the planet. He said there are three methods of dealing with diabetes. The first one is healthy lifestyle. What you must eat, how you must eat, what you must avoid, exercise. That is the first method of dealing with diabetes. That's why doing that, you can't identify diabetes. You don't have to be forced to take any medication. Just by deciding that this is what you must eat, this is what you must not eat, this is how you can eat, this will be healthy, stop smoking, drinking a lot of beer, taking a lot of carbohydrates and sugar and all that. That is the third method of dealing with diabetes. The second method is to pop pills. Move around with a bag full of pills and pop them in business, in range and all that. Or when you eat, post-injection, very common. There are people who are forced to live by injection. I'm not undermining diabetes. That's a very early in life. Not at that onset. I know diabetes, that's a very early in life. They have to take injections. But I'm talking about those who have got adult onset diabetes, that they could still control it. So the second method is to poke injection, very common a day. The third method is to start removing organs. Your kidney is now damaged, you need new kidneys. Your cornea is damaged, you need a new cornea. You need to be amputated. We must put a prosthetic leg because the leg or foot is not healthy because of diabetes. Then we start changing organs. And you are saying any doctor or any lab worker who specializes in the first method will not be given the commission. It's a wise and intelligent person. The one who will get the Nobel Prize is the one who is able to change poverty. You'll be put in parentheses in front of the world. And we are not saying it's not a good innovation, but we are saying it doesn't change humanity. It doesn't change the cost of human beings. What changes the cost of human beings is 50% of what is being emphasized, but that's never emphasized. Now, Cuba is really successful. That's why they were able to eradicate mother to start transmission. That's why they were able to eradicate malaria. That's why they were able to eradicate measles. That's why they got cholera for the first time in 50 years, in 2011. They have been back for 50 years. But the question is, those are not recognized. So we are, I'm giving that example because we're going to have a very tough year to make people recognize the value of primary health care. In 2011, I was reading a letter by a member of parliament here from one of the parties. When we started issues like, when we started discussing with industry to reduce souls in teaching staff, you are aware that we did that, in raising bride and chicken, by the way, wrote me a letter and said, Minister, you are running away from the basics. Go and improve the public health system. You are dealing with corruption. If you go and improve them, you will have to worry about who is what, how much souls, you know. Meaning that I'm appealing to eat as much souls as you can get. That means you are sitting with get a throw and from it that the things are ready to fix. And you call that basic. Now that I think really that's an entity that has been used, even among health workers sometimes. So it's going to be a change of attitude about the public. Can we re-engineer the primary health care system and regard it as something that we can do? Can we do that in the pilot system? That's what I was talking about this. Now the first thing was acquiring these clinical specialties to help. And what are the specialties? We look at the better of the part-time burden of disease that the country is going through, and look at the disease burden, and found that if you have to make an impact in a rural district, you need a gynecologist, you need a anesthetist, you need a family physician, you need a physician, these four. On the next side, you need an advanced midwife, you need an advanced primary health care nurse, you need an advanced pediatric nurse, 6-7. Time and again, I get asked, what about psychiatry? What about surgery? What about trauma? Orthopedics, etc. But we chose this seven in terms of the better of disease of what rural areas need. And said, at least, if they can have specialists in the rural areas, it will make a difference. As I told you, these people don't go to implementation events, but they go around to make sure that there are protocols, there are guidelines, there are policies that are being followed. Even in areas where there is no doctor. Secondly, they go around identifying gaps that in clinics and in that hospital they are unable to do this, they are failing to do that, can we go in and see them? Now, this is proving to be very difficult. It's not easy, certainly, to get specialists to go to all the 10 pilot cities. So we are not trying to show you, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, that out of the twice we need, that's what we got. In the free state, that's what we got. The anesthetist, that's what we got, etc., etc. These are the numbers of people. As you can see, there are only two districts there that will have the whole complement of what we need. And that is Swan and Egypt in the Western Cape. That will have the complement. Now, we have been for about 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, in under correction with the specialties. What difference are they making? Are they making an impact or is it just our theory? We asked for a review, which was funded by the DG. Can they review the impact? And that review has been finalized, but I've not yet got the report. I'm told that they are still typing the report to tell us that, look, don't continue this system, it's not making any impact, it's not making any changes, or it has got rather potential because it's still very early days. And so we're waiting for that report. Then the municipal law big primary outreach teams. Chairperson, this is a very complex concept in South Africa, and one of the members here has asked me a question about it. I've just given an example. that even our national development head said myself, not a lot of primary health care outreach in the villages. In Brazil, they call it the primary health care agents. There are 14,000 of them. I've just given an example that in India, there are 800,000 they call them primary health care agents. Now, in South Africa, this concept is complex because of what we did to ourselves. Somewhere around 1996-98 to 2000, when HIV got out of control, remember there was no treatment at that time. It was even before the court system. The issue of denial, as you know, was still very strong in the country. They were not treating people. A lot of people were dying. There was death all over. A lot of people were in the homes. Mortality was, the obesity was very high. People lost courage. And because of that, something happened in the country that is now very difficult to control. People just crop up here and there. Lots and lots of people who are volunteers. Home-based care workers to care for the sick until they die. Hospitals crop up. Lay catheters. You know, lots and lots of people. Some were hired by NGOs, others by the Department of Health, some by the churches, they were all over. And Chairperson, please understand me, I don't think that was fair. I'm not saying that was fair. But I'm saying it was handled out of fair. It was mostly spontaneous. It was a spontaneous response by a population that is in trouble. And lots of people came in that way. Now, when we wake up in this era and time, some are getting salaries, others are getting stipends, some are being employed by municipalities, others by social development, some by health churches, NGOs. But all of them are waiting with the patients in the Republic. And so this is putting a dilemma, because all of them want a very clear level of being coordinated. They need to be hired in other ways. And our NDP says so. Now we have to do a good. How many people are we talking about here who are calling, who regard themselves as being primary health care or community work in the country? Our audit shows that we have 70,000 of such people all around. Find the number of them registered nowhere. They just come and say, oh, I'll be volunteering. For 5 years, when you change, you find that it's true. This person is known in that village and living this way. But it's not very clear where the agreement was made, what skills this person has got, whether they did have any training or, you know, so it's not very clear. But this country is 20,000 people. Everywhere you go, I personally visited, even yesterday, when I visited the Indian social movement, before I left, I was surrounded by a team of people. We put the thousand years they've been there. When you ask them what have we know, we've been volunteering, it's 5 years, 7 years. This is very complex. Now, our municipal work-based primary health care outreach teams must be people that are part and parcel of the health care system, recognized, even at the team. So it means they must have a particular level of training. They must have certain basic qualifications. For instance, I met a group of lay counselors in housing who stormed my office and said, Minister, can you employ us as teams? I said, no, but I thought you were doing a bigger job of being HIV in lay counselors. Why do you want to be a cleaner? They said, no, what is very difficult for them? I don't even have a seat. How did you do a job? No, I just volunteered and I found myself doing the job. So there were no criteria. Now, here, we need criteria, we need qualification, we need training. In other words, when you put 10 and we say must have this 10 in this world, this 10 must specialize. They must be able to do HIV this way. They must be able to do well about TB. They must be able to understand hand communication for diseases. They must understand mental health. They must understand nutrition. They must understand immunization, antenatal care, etc. This is the way we started and we are starting to train. And we are starting to, we are going to start this process of training to hire people. Now, at the moment, we believe if we take 10 statistics, it means 40,000 people. What do you do with the 80,000 others who consider themselves to be part of this way? When can you bring them on stream? It's not something that is going to help them at once. That's where the complexity comes in. And Chairperson, it's causing us a problem. Because time and again, you find it, you find matches, you find anger. caused by the soil. It's a big mess that the country can itself is amassing, and it's a very, very difficult. Some actually decision by expanded public program is better, but I just want to confess that we are finding a mountain to climb and to make sense of this anomaly in which we put ourselves in a spontaneous situation that was happening. Why am I saying so? Some of the home-based workers find themselves not knowing what to do. Because, as you know, most of the people who were married by the time of HIV, I'm no longer there. The NCOP might remember that I brought Mrs. Kuman here to be congratulated, who was running a hospice where a lot of things were dying on in Monday. And she was coming to announce that that hospice and hospice has been closed down. There's no more needs. And now you find that when they close down such institutions, some of the people were waiting there, but nowhere to go. But I'm just trying to show how in the private district we are trying to make sense of this. The problem that is far advanced on this issue is Kingsland End, where they took all these workers, regardless of where to employ them, put them under one roof in the criminal process, and went with them, had the process towards integrating them into one unit. We are also seeing the interest technology, a few of them who are advanced, so that they can, when they get into the houses, they can send back the message to the clinic about what they are finding out there. And this is just doing a training session where they are being trained. Then school-based primary health facilities. I've already spoken about why we need school health for the 12 million school going. The European Union chairperson got us this year. We are using the priority for primary health care. And maybe I need to summarize what we are doing in school health. We basically have five things to address. The first one, we must see which fiscal barriers to lay. We must have the Department of Business to identify the issue of fiscal barriers to lay. What are fiscal barriers to lay? It was never done in North Africa. Many of the rulers complain to me. As many chiefs from where to do family come to them because they can't see where they're school. What about the poor kids? So, I find the digital barrier to learning. Teachers may not be able to identify that. The second digital barrier to learning is hearing. Many kids are not that hear very well, and teachers believe they are dumb. They can't hear what the teacher saying because they've got hearing problems that's not being checked. The third one, speech, oral hygiene. Many people cannot pronounce and speak very well because of the problems they've got in their mouth and nobody knows that. We have identified that as the first major thing that must happen. The second one is immunization data. Kids who have missed their immunization schedule can we pick up at school and deal with it. The third one is the issue of drugs and alcohol at school. This problem of Yahoo, which we start talking about when people are already heavily addicted. I see a very good example at Worcester. Worcester here in the Western Cape, I was very impressed. Here and there, without any help of government, decided that they need to deal with it as hard as possible. When kids are in grade 6 at school, they start teaching them literally. It's hard for us to be. They show them pictures of pregnant mother, how a baby grows when they're taking alcohol, and the baby grows when the mother is not taking alcohol. They give them a bean plant and water in which put that water and the other one with alcohol and compare them. And they told us that when they do that after grade 6, it's too late. They keep the brain from their mind. So they said, at school, you can stop some of these things. You know, a child with fetal alcohol syndrome is invisible. So if you can stop it, and that lesson is given to learners, both boys and boys and girls. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about the health program at school. The fourth one, HIV counseling and safety. And the sixth one will be reproductive health and rights. When we launched the school health program in 2011, I asked Minister Engineer there to call all the federation of school governing bodies and all the teachers union together for me to address them on this issue. As parents, I addressed them, Mr. President, and there's a problem here. They told me that we see that different programs we can go on with the school. But the other two, they told me to wait. Meaning one, HIV is considering and testing the schools and the productive health rights. Parents is very sensitive, You will disrupt their kids, you know they let them scared. But they said the others don't even talk to us, just go and do. Don't even ask us. But this we need to agree. So that's why they are still debating. Even now, whether you have kids called down to the school, whether you, you know, it's a very difficult issue. Part of how we solve this is what we did yesterday. You are aware that yesterday we launched a website called BY for the youth, whereby we're going to communicate with them on the cell phone. We are going to divide them into 10 to 14 years old age group, 16 to 19 years age group, 20 to 24 years, to talk with them about their problems of alcohol and drug, pregnancy, teenage pregnancy, etc., etc., all that will be done. Because at schools, parents are saying no. It's not that this is not happening in all the schools. It's not happening uniformly. In some schools, they are saying, I already know schools are saying, and where parents themselves said, this is condoms. But in others, it's a taboo. So, these five problems, the three are making very well. Now, let me go back to the track. That set track is there. It's what we call a primary care track. That is the one that will lead to innovation. It can do circumcision. It can do the weight exercise. It's doing the whole, it can do family training, the whole lot of primary care work. The second track, which I did not put here, is for oral hygiene, where if you have got an x-ray inside, you can x-ray the next food, etc. The last one is for eye care. It can even give a prescription of spectacles. You can change a child and say it's one with spectacles, etc. So we have got these issues in the pilot space, and we're trying to use them. Now, the first problem, hearing, oral hygiene, and high five. These are finished screening 280,000 school kids. If kids are one and two in this pilot system, you have to check. The fearful thing, I mean, the result that's where is that we found that out of the 280,000, that's a big screening. One third of them have got either of the three problems. One third has either got some problem in high five, or some problem in hearing, and some problem in oral hygiene. And what they need optometry, they need speech therapy, they need audiology. All those things will have to be found in the public health service. You need them in the pilot system. They can say in the public health service. That means us to understand that this contracting with GPs cannot be the method that we must use in the public health service. We must contract many other health workers. We must be allowed be able to contract and speech therapy and say go to schools and check these kids we have seen. We must be able to contract the audiologist and say we screen these kids, they've got heavy problems because kids were and see them and see exactly how they are going to be reading them. That is the method we are looking at, so that we don't have to contract GD, so we will contract the whole. Otherwise we will never be able to fight problems like this, because then we won't be able to deal with them at the parallel level. So, here we are showing you the change, the number of change takes on the priority that has already been upgraded to do this work. Then we come to quality of health in the system. First is information management system, the patient administration, rationalization of the assessment of primary health, patient information system. I'll let my team to help me here. Basically, what we found is that in our teams in the country, for many, many decades, nurses have to still register. I'm sure you can see that number. Nurses over the age are still registered. They write and write and write. When a patient comes to a clinic, the nurse has found themselves to be 56 registered. There are 56 registered in clinical language that are used in primary care facilities. And we discovered that nurses spend a lot of time and effort making sure that they satisfy the information of those registered. And that happens in all the clinics in the Republic. We decided to rationalize those registered into six only. And I'm showing you the second there. There was still a change in comprehensive training. Register, rather than certain daily account register. They must feel what is called here as less of ARP for all HIV positive patients, including TB, pregnant women, HIV, babies, etc. TB registered, change identification and treatment registered. Yes, there exists opportunities that are performing medical medical submission and dissemination of pregnancy. These are registered. And midnight sense of PET facilities provide good vision. These are the only situations that we can see. So we have to start the job of reducing from 56 to 6 and give the different address. As you can see, this is a whole lot of things that we are showing you there that we're happening in our team, which was thinking of its work. And then the work of professionalizing, they are actually showing you there the total number of registered. Registered that has been delivered to facilities for a total number of suppliers, registered district, grand total, etc. That work is being done. And this is just showing you the new register, in the more logistics that I think we will be doing. So that work is happening on so far, which tells us to see how far we are with that work. The findings of being this register is that it helps us to reduce waiting times. Because it is no longer spend a lot of time cleaning the register. Reporting all two elements and workload is less. Uniformity of data collection, tools, reading, collect, administering, or monitoring. More time spent with patients, that's more important. The letters are no longer tracked, just being registered. They are spending more time with patients. And they are removing duplication. They are collecting data very easily. And it's easy for you. Health patient registration. In the primary healthcare patient information system, and we are also trying to implement that, where that's showing you the criteria there and the training, etc., etc. I don't have to spend a lot of time there. But we are also doing something very important there. We believe if NHI is going to work and our systems can improve, we need the automated PHC patient information. And so, in the NHI pilot project, there are 700 facilities, 700 units and hospitals. All 700 of them have received more than 3,000 computers. We are implementing different technology. The second phase of this is to go to 1,400 facilities and do it this way, of different technology. In other words, when the patient arrives, instead of queuing for 5 hours, literally they are going to queue for 5 hours, waiting for a vial. They just press the computer there and wait for about 5 seconds, not 5 hours. And I've seen that in practice. And also it will help us, because some facilities actually expire, some don't even have storage space, we lose a lot of information, especially when we see patients. We found that a lot of vials are stolen. So if they are stored in a computer, it will be much better. People have traveled quite a lot of kilometers around the country to do this way. It's not a very easy way. And the number of patients registered in 50 petabytes in the initial pilot project. So I just showed you the area where the work is completed and done. And we are very happy about that. That just shows some of the distance that has been covered in order to do that way. This is about accreditation, about accreditation and contracting of private providers, but let me start with co-accreditation. Chairperson, the issue of waiting time in the clinic is a big problem, as we know. Many people believe it should the collapse of the healthcare system when people have to wait for 10 hours. The reason that the waiting time should not be having a problem can only become worse if we don't become innovative. If you go back to 2004, you will remember that only 400,000 people were on ARVs. That number doubled by 2009 to 93,000. Today we are talking about more than 3 million people who are on ARVs. All of them want to clinics. There's no way the number of clinics or health facilities and the number of nurses and doctors who have what is increasing the number of patients getting care, not the number of patients in health workers. We can't keep on with that case. Meaning that if a person is waiting for 2 hours, it's then increased to 6 hours, 6 hours down to 12 hours, etc., etc. When you had the explosion of non-communicable diseases, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer, which are also on the increase around the whole world, when you add that to this pattern of HIV and AIDS, you see why our healthcare system is so congested the way it is that way. So we need to find a number of levels. One of them is this physical other thing that I would have a good people at those will help. The reduction of many diseases that are going to is also due to waiting time. But we are also saying, can we remove most of the patients that are on chronic medications and are very stable? There are many patients who go there with for 10 hours, just to reduce their monthly supply, nothing else. And we said those patients did not come to hospitals of need. We can find a way where diabetes is developed. And that's called the central chronic medication dispensing and distribution problem. At the moment, as you can see there at the bottom, there are about 380,000 people who are on that. We want to put at least a video patient or close to a video later on. All these things, and it will have a role in decoding our hospital settings because these patients choose the area where the chronic medication will be developed. In the Western Cape, the current crisis is about the using different methods that are containing them, whereby they don't necessarily deliver the same particular point, but the patient goes to the clinic themselves, but they don't go. There's an area in the clinic where they just go straight to relieve this medication. That's not an area that the other provinces, but the other provinces are using this new system, whereby. The complex of the new system is that we have to give the same provider with the medicines and the addresses and the data. The same way to apply these people. Now, as you know, we provide AR medicine, but the other medicines are in the province. Now, the complexity is that if the patient is both HIV positive and diabetes, and we are able to do the HIV part, and not the diabetes, the part on diabetes, that will help. That is what will come to him. Now, to integrate them and say, in one patient, you're going to treat them for HIV, you are treating them for hypertension for diabetes, and you must provide all that treatment. That could be very complex, and that's why the process is very slow. Otherwise, we'll have to register them like that, and we are trying to integrate all those processes. The other is hospital reimbursement. This is very important, Chair President, for the HR. It's not left by the thing in the pilot project. This is happening in the 10 central hospitals in the country. Hospital reinvestment reform. If we are going to reinvest people via NHR, what method are we going to use? We are aware that this is a debate around the whole world. A method of fee for service, or capitation, or what is called DRG or diagnosis related groups, as an alternative reinvestment group for hospitals. This involves developing a very diagnosis related group tool for 10 central hospitals across the country. As of 2015, the Department of Health has managed to extract clinical and financial data from the hospital. The data has been categorized into clinical measures in these groups as part of preliminary clinical work. Technical work on these needs and actuarial analysis has been undertaken on the data and has been updated and the calculation process has been undertaken with regard to the data other than third-party sources. In other words, we are trying to do this work so that when we say, when we reinvest people, we are using the diagnosis related tools, what actually are we talking about? Chairperson, that's more or less the way that it's been done. I don't know whether any member of the team has got something to feel that the men's problems have been unbalanced. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. If there is anything that one is to fill up, can we agree that if it's a bit long, we can do it now, short, when one question arises, and then in responding, you also fill up that. I just want to get that information.
Let me answer one question before they ask. They have to ask me what is the right thing. Yes, I know that question is coming. Yes. Chairperson, we have completed that work the part that was leaving behind was the financial model, which is not done by us, by Tesha. It's very busy with the economic problems that are happening around the country, as you can see. But that has been done. We have already set in motion across the capital process, whereby first of all it must go to a social tracker committee, then to a capital committee, and eventually to cabinet. Then it will be released to the public. As already speaking to the DG in the present previous campaign to expedite that process, because we have already asked for that process and which bed we are in the line of the cabinet processes. But as to one of our clients on what the right people are to say all that, that's where it's being completed. So we are just waiting for that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. I remember today's presentation and said a couple of times, Honorable Manshek, Honorable James, Honorable Maisere, Honorable Vonik, Honorable Mosala. I hope you have captured that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start off by welcoming this presentation. And like the book, exactly what the best way is, I think the issue of NHI has always been a focus. But I'm glad that you have clarity with that. Let me start off by saying, Honorable Minister Jefferson, with regard to the issue of drugs of our long queues, attitudes of staff, it is my observation that as a direct result of the national department, the national minister not having a say in the appointment of any issues in the different posts that are called in very often there are challenges in the process, and of course the national department can't do much about it because it does not have a say in the appointing them. The second thing is, I must comment on the issue of prevention. Yes, it is the route to go. I think the efforts that are put by the department in terms of employment. But my concern also there is there enough being done? Because I think in the commercialized society that we live, everything is about profit making. So 9 out of 10 times, everything that you buy, what might be tasteful, is also harmful. And with the amount of advertising, the promotions that go on there, I don't know that some state, if we want to ensure that our people live healthy, that we have to have a balance. And I don't see the balance, because while the effort by the Department of Health is there to try and ensure that people practice safe or good healthy eating habits, with the media coverage, with the advertising, with the products there, but the limited knowledge of the products itself that are there, the false or information that is provided on products, I think it also plays a massive role in the society that we live in, and that any impact on the health system. So the demand is going to continue unless we are able to tell you that we the attitude of staff also is a problem. I think it has been a problem for a long time, but I think the problem there is issues of introducing and attracting the right kind of people with a passion for healthcare rather than just people or graduates or learners coming out of school and wanting to go into nursing or into the healthcare just because they need a job. Also, this issue of the involvement of the private sector, I'm not sure whether that is now being done because I think too much of emphasis is on what government and the departments are able to do, and I believe that the private sector, again, is so commercial, it's all about money. Maybe at some stage they need to come play a greater role in serving the people of the country and where they make all their money. So that for me is also a with regard to small clinics, of course, I think it's something to be inherent. It's a long term process. You can't expect much of your training yet. You know, 160 years of issues that you tell you that you have, so I would think CMT will take time. My concern is health, especially the challenges that we face in there, and the issue of attracting doctors. And what I want to know is, I know that there's a significant increase in the number of GPs that are now coming on. And I know at the SADC conference there was an agreement between all the SADC countries where we will try and get some skills from SADC. And my understanding is also that there are lots and lots of GPs that are available from SADC member states. So I would like to know whether there would be in the future be some plan to rather take GPs from the SADC states so that we can make use of and improve the quality of
Can I request the next honorable members, you know, the advantage of being a first speaker, you okay, so also setting up the pace and the trend. Be very thin on comments, but direct on questions, so that we are then able to. The next is honorable James.
Madam Chair, thank you to the Minister for your presentation. Given the nature of our health burden, it is right to emphasize primary health care and to focus in a compelling way on prevention. And so the primary health care priority is right, and we support that certainly. And part of that, the building of clinics as part of the pilot scheme, which is also quite right. And therefore, we think that's a right point of emphasis. What I want to ask are the following questions, because clearly there are constraints given the fact that a lot of the delivery happens on the provincial level. And one constraint is around infrastructure delivery schedules, which is partly tied up with the tender system, but also the ability of construction companies to finish on time. And I had just a report from 5 weeks in the Free State, which raised a problem for me. Let me just tell you what I heard. The first is on the election link, which presently is supposed to be done in 2012. It's 95% complete, and the contract has been overpaid by 116,000 rand. The presumed current link 80% complete, but the contract has been overpaid to date by 1.8 million. The Senegal clinic is 69% complete, overpaid by the contract has been overpaid by 1.8 million. The Memon clinic is 67% complete, contract has been overpaid by 1.9 million. And then the Magalan name clinic in Kwakwa, where the clinic is not even, the building hasn't started, but the contract has already been paid 3 million. So the tender system, administration of the money, and the completion of the delivery is a problem. These are not necessarily NHS pilot sites, but clearly that constraint, that is people under control. And so the question to the Ministry is what is doing to get that under control. My second question has to do with, I mean, is infrastructure and staffing. And one of the things we actually learned from the Cuba doctors is the fact that there's a need for an expert that stands between the super nurse and the junior doctor. And I believe there's training programs presently underway, private training programs to train clinical aides. Because at some point the Cuban doctor will be cycled out, and you definitely need to train doctors that have a specialty that is in the area of being a GP, but not specialist. And where the daily monitoring effects and some of the work is through with
are you talking about the mid-level workers or something? The present group of people who are called mid-level workers.
Yes.
Who are somewhere between the doctor and
right. And so and the question is what is the training being undertaken and how will that be rolled out in the future? What is the start of this? And just my third question, this is the last one, is that for the pilot sites, in fact, the money for the pilot sites, money being returned, they're not being spent, and the grant being cut for the next cycle. And so, I mean, the whole concept of the NHI is that we will do the pilot sites, construct the clinic, and then we will scale it up nationally. To scale it up nationally would require an enormous amount of money, which is why the Treasury report on finances is really quite important, and at the current growth rate that we're going and the current budget expense is affordable presently. But nevertheless, even with that being so, the current money that has been set aside is not spent, seems to me, and so there's been a cut in the budget, and that's a major problem. Is the Minister please comment on that?
One of the striking characteristics is that the citizens believe in
the health system that believe in the objective of universal health coverage, whether it be Singapore, whether it be the Scandinavian countries, whether it be Cuba. We have a lack of confidence in South Africa, unfortunately, in the health system. And there's confusion around this concept of NHI, what does it actually mean? So what are we going to do to address in the public mind, the confusion around the NHI? Because if it's going to work, we need to get the public behind it. Certainly for the ultimate objective of universal health coverage. The last question I have is going back to the need to move from curative to preventive care. You know, if you look at the quadruple burden machines, if you look at NGDs, for example, we know that they're important preventive measures that need to be taken in order for NGDs to decrease so that the epidemiological shift can be halted. And if you look at the four base points, stopping smoking, reducing alcohol, attention, nutrition, decreasing obesity, and physical activity. These are bedlines that we recognize in WHR. This is as a example. How do those elements get integrated into the engineering of public healthcare? So, for example, other teams of health workers are the tools where they're educating the public around those factors. Just as an example, you know, where there may be shortcomings around preventive measures into the system, into the role of medicine.
First, I think we must appreciate and welcome the government's progress report on the NHI sites, you know, the report that was actually given to us. Because I think it begins to indicate to us, the portfolio committee, the progress that has been made thus far, the challenges that are there, and what still needs to be done going forward, you know, to make sure that we achieve the goals that we have set ourselves. Now, I want to start with this document, Honorable Minister, this document that we're giving on page 4, under NHI conditional grants. I've got only three questions. On page 4, I think the last two paragraphs are the most critical ones, you know, in this particular report. The one that we're giving and we will compare the GX. Yes. Page 4. Yeah. It says the key concern around the NHI conditional grant. It says the key concern around the grant includes that in 2012-2013, the estimated shortfall in equipment needs was 110 million are ever today. Page 4. There's just two paragraphs.
Yes.
It says next 110 million is spent collectively by districts for procuring equipment. The districts indicate that not all facilities have met the minimum equipment needs. An examination of the actual spend shows that only 55% of the expenditure is classified as medical equipment with computer related. And so the last paragraph is, at the NGOH level, there is a strong view that this grant should be transformed and reprioritized to upgrade strategic level. The officials of the National Treasury also supported the view that this grant should be used to support the IG case. Now, I know in the past we've been, as a committee, raising issues around grants, the spending, and so on and so forth. Now, given the particular view as expressed by both the department and Treasury, I just want to check how far are we in terms of reconciling the two views as expressed, and are we in the next financial year going to see a meeting altogether in terms of those in this particular NH grant? Are we going to have a new approach altogether from the current one so that the progress in Africa. The other question is the next page, which is page 5. Under 4.1.3, infrastructure spending and planning. The last paragraph there under 4.1.3 says, the National Department Infrastructure was unable to share the data on their plans of use of funds. The National Department Infrastructure was unable to share the data on the plans of use of funds, not could they indicate what the level of spending was. I'm going to the next one, Treasurer. The particular has not been paralyzed.
No.
Oh, yeah, yes. No. Yes, yes. According to the National Treasury, while the financial has not been paralyzed, there was a strong sense that the overspending on the National Health Funds, which is the infrastructure only, who failed to meet 25% for the 2015-2016 financial debt. I'm saying, I saw you when you were giving us all the people that to the issue of this thing. But the general point that is being made is that there seems to be a disharmony between what is happening at national level and what is happening at provincial level. Because if you take paragraph above, it says at district level, the district manager seems not to know what this money is being spent on. You take the paragraph above. This is the finding of the people who are doing the research. If you look at that current today, the last question. I see on slide 48, under the word based chief, the requirement this evening, it's 109, the required word based team. But compared to other provinces or other districts and so on and so forth, it's blank there. On the presentation that you made, Honorable Minister. So the question is, whether you have provided information by the Western Cape for you to include here, or whether the Western Cape does not regard itself as part and parcel of this particular process, or what is the situation? What are the reasons why we are having all provinces showing some problems with regard to the what they speak, but yet there is nothing? And that you would also appreciate, Chair, if once the review of the impact of the district specialization team has been completed, if we can get a presentation and a report in the particular regard. And we would also, maybe not going forward, each of the three categories that the minister spoke about with regard to the issue of the NHI, if each one of them can be targeted carefully and we get reports, then I think it will assist us to follow up as and when we do our oversight. Thank you very much.
For the last two members, I'm going to ask questions. I'm having a question. In particular to visitors. If none of them are asking questions, which you may not be comfortable of, and you don't hear, don't make questions. I'm not going to say more than that. But it's a humble warning. We did say that the house rules, the gum rules, yes, irrespective, even if they are members of parliament, if they are members of whatever party, if a member is asking a question that you think that is irrelevant or whatever, don't make a gesture that as a chair I'm able to pick up. I'm hungry for questioning that. Okay? That's why I say you're not going to say from where, but I just pick up that and very much uncomfortable. We also request the Honourable Minister not to interject when members are responding to questions, just wait until the time that we respond. The last two is Honourable Chuane, Honourable Jasta, and the last one is Honourable Ndab, in that order.
Thanks for your understanding, Chair. Honourable Minister, on the report, I'm wondering if I'm happy that the spirit of the NHI really is to advance primary health care. And I think you must address that in this country. That is the gold standard, primary health care. The question on the ideal clinics, I was just checking. Maybe I did not look at the structure properly. There's a provision for X-ray facilities at a clinic level. There's a lot of evidence, Honourable Minister, you know that you've been in the field, that the influx of many people that go to hospital in most cases also want X-ray facilities. Yes? And we're going to be able to put doctors at clinics. And X-ray facilities that people have in this community contribution process of many persons. There's really an X-ray. potential roles on the talks, the two OPs, the human questions that we've been seeing at a hospital level. And I think when we've got doctors at the clinic level, we should have a couple of things to deal with that question. We could look at the registers of the cases we deal with, even at the clinical level, you know, on calling the thoughts and complications and so on and so forth. And I think the concept of the ideal clinic should also look at those type of issues. The field workers at our first conference, I think we need to relook at it because it's part of primary health care, and I think it would really make a lot of difference. It really assists the usually because we know we've got a lot of cases of people who have chronic conditions that some of them are able to access or receive themselves free to the primary health care process.
I need to start with is the issue of chronic medication that the department, the minister was talking about, that they want to appoint service providers to go and deliver straight to patients. I think that one is 100% supported by the chair, because we know that most of the people, they came to hospitals, patients are attended to, they stay there for a long time because maybe nurses or doctors are not doing their work properly. But no, it's not true. If minister, that thing can be done, it will reduce the long queues in hospitals and clinics. I think that one is much about 100%. But with the issue of the concept of ideal clinics, I think we are witness to one of the, I think the hospitals that we have seen in Zimbabwe that has all disciplines, you know, whether it's a psychologist or speech therapist, you know, I'm impressed, okay, that is in a rural area. So the department is doing well. So we need to commend that they have done well there. But I think one key issue, Chairperson, that is critical and the department must address as quick as possible is the review of the establishment records, Chair, of the clinics and the hospitals. So that, you know, they can be able to appoint adequate personnel, because you know what a high rate of shortage of nurses, doctors, and stuff. But Chair, you remember when we were doing overnight visits, most of the clinics and hospitals that we visited, they were complaining about the establishment records that does not allow them to appoint extra personnel, taking into consideration that the population that they are servicing now has grown. So maybe if the department can just do the review of establishment records of all clinics and hospitals, that can also assist. Because one of the reasons that maybe staff has got attitude is due to credit that they're working under. You know, so maybe, you know, if that can be reviewed so that they can be able to appoint enough personnel, maybe we can address that problem, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. The practice has always been that after questions, we then allow the department to sort out through the minister who's going to respond to what. But because of the pressures of time, there's now an indication that people are on the 1 o'clock flight. The latest to leave here is to be the latest and to 12 to leave the premises. So one break for tea. If someone wants to go for tea, we'll just quietly go and have his or her cup of tea. And then we will allow the minister and his team to respond on questions. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions, which are very helpful. I just want to start by mentioning to members that the whole concept of NHI is a new concept to the country. And universal health coverage, which many have quoted, like Kamiyali, etc., will make you realize that no one country's universal health coverage looks like the other. It does not look the same. It depends on your objective conditions on there. But the objective is that the citizens of that country must be able to get access to good quality, affordable health care, regardless of their socio-economic status. That's the whole aim of universal health coverage. That's why it's going to the United Nations. So a whole lot of proposals will be made, and we might clash in those proposals. So in the pilot, we allow quite a number of practices to see which one will better suit the country, because this is a debate that's going on. I suspect that given the issue that Dr. Goldman has mentioned about resistance, it has happened in many parts of the world, and I'm believing after the United Nations have passed it, maybe I'll come to it later, it will have changing momentum and people will start understanding. But I'm just saying this is a very new venture for which we don't have, just like when we started the New South African Foundation, there was no textbook to refer to. We agreed as South Africans that this is the best for us. And in that process, the mistakes were made, some of the things which have been changed now, etc. The same will happen here. The last question from Honorable Imam Shaikh about, the last question is about health versus profits and business. This is an ongoing battle around the world. Next month, when the General Health Assembly is to adopt the Sustainable Development Goals after the end of the Millennium Development Goals, there are going to be three goals adopted in health. One of them is about the non-communicable disease. How do we deal with the risk factors? And we know them. It's about smoking, alcohol, bad diet, and lack of exercise. The first three is about business, the business that has health. This issue has got so complex that 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember the name, the Director General of the World Organization, and the Director General of the World Trade Organization, and the Director General of the World Intellectual Property Rights Organization, they have to meet and discuss this issue. You are living in the world where business is allowed this to go on, but they also must be held. And they have to meet, and there's a declaration which maybe I'll look for and give to members. So let's be complex. How do you balance that business does not kill health, but health does also not kill business? Because that's the world in which we're living. So those three directors were trying to give direction to the world. For instance, take for instance the issue of smoking. We all know it's no longer in debate. We all agree that smoking is no longer needed in any part of the world. There's not, nobody has given a proof that humanity has gained anything from smoking. Other than that, you all know that. You know how the former Minister of Health in Australia took huge steps about the issue of smoking in 2011 at the meeting of Commonwealth Ministers of Health in Geneva. We also can read a vision as Ministers of Common Health that we are going to support him, because she did everything to reduce smoking in Australia by that which she designed that common, I mean, that partnership, that best branding. There was a court case she was taking to court, and Commonwealth Minister took a resolution that if she wins, we'll all follow her. She went to win, but before we could follow her, she's been taken to the World Trade Organization. That means she went on the side of health. They are now saying, well, let's make health happen. They now want to say, no, this is a breach of business agreement around the world, and they are taking it to the World Trade Organization to reverse all the aims that that health has done. But even before the World Trade Organization said, UK has that law on branding, others followed. So we have already got many countries that have law. I know France had a meeting which I could attend where they want to follow. We want to follow very soon, but we don't know what the ruling of the World Trade Organization is going to be. The issues of aid versus, you know. So we are going to come to you. We are going to have them. For instance, on diet, we have agreed with industry about food. But more of these people who need new kidneys, who get strokes, which are so common, is because of the intake of salt, which is from industry. Now you are aware that we have got it on the government gazette that we are going to decrease the amount of salt in many foodstuffs. But we know one of the enemies is sugar. You know that. And we have not started attacking sugar. But you know what is happening? When last have you been to Woolworths or Pick n Pay? Go and see what's happening there. They've changed the health. And that's not innocent. They are not just changing them to look beautiful. They've changed the shell. When you go to the chief, you move through a passage. Yes. In that passage, they don't put any common things. They put things which you want to be home to go and buy. But they want to say, go and check there, it's chocolate, it's sweet. Just take a chance and go with your kids there, you'll come out crying. I tried to take your kids and go to, and I'm sorry to mention shops, but it's not departmental shops. Sorry to have said one way, maybe you'll share something like that. Is doing it to surprise us, all the departmental stores. When you move through the passage, they put all these things, sweet, chocolate, things that will not have come to mind. They put them there for you as you are waiting at the sheet, and people pick them up, increasing the addiction on sugar. And it causes us all these problems, strokes, etc. We must treat them. The reason that we go to the United Nations is because it's beyond ministers of hell. It's being given to heads of state, and I will tell you the reason. When we met in Moscow under the World Organization in 2011 to discuss this issue, the World Organization disclosed that if we don't take harsh actions on this issue, stern action, in the next decade or two, many ministers of health around the world will not be able to stand up in front of Parliament and present any feasible health budget. Meaning what do you mean by not presenting a feasible health budget? Whatever budget you present, it will be meaningless. Because almost every citizen will be needing, will be on treatment for diabetes, for high blood pressure, for cancer. You know, will be in new kidneys, will be in line for dialysis, will be needing 3 injections a day. That is the fear around the world, that no minister of health can deal with this issue. But it's going to be a clash between business and those who believe in the market forces, they say we must be the market minister. Do your way, feed them. People are ruining tea. This is very expensive. Do you know how much dialysis costs? Just dialysis, 1 person per annum. In the public sector, it's $150,000 per person. In the private sector, it's $300,000 per person. Where do you get money for that? In Gauteng only, by 2010, we have already had 500 people on the waiting list of dialysis. I know many members of parliament come to me. Why don't you increase the dialysis facilities? Why don't you do that? That can't be the answer of that question. At what cost? At 300,000 rand per person. Where does the country get that amount of money from? So we are going to have to be careful. That's why, Chairperson, that's one of the proposals in the White Paper. We are going to ask that we form a national health commission in this country. A commission which must be chaired by the deputy president of the country. Whoever is the deputy president, that must fall within their work. And that person must be deputized by somebody from the academy, somebody who knows the situation in which you are moving. The Minister of Health will only be the judge. Because when I mention these things, people just believe it's health, you know. All ministers of health want us to be healthy, they don't want us to eat. These are developmental issues. It's going beyond health. The development of countries, the economy, everything can collapse. So we'll form that commission and we'll put people in from the private sector to show them that, yes, you want the business to continue. But what about the population? So that the ruling of that commission will come to Parliament and give an advice that pass this law, pass this act. You are aware that when we do that, we already call the next state. Many people say you are a next state when you do that. But when you eat injections and feel, they don't say you are a next state, they say it's wrong. There's a double standard here. If I'm supposed to issue pills and injections and I realize that this is too much for the country, there's something else I can do. Why? So I told those people who say we are a native state that after September, when the United Nations passes this resolution on non-communicable diseases, we are going to be facing the daily world if we are running away from the native state. Because the world cannot run away from this. The issue of private sector. Honorable, he must say, you know, in 2010, I met 16 CEOs of private sector companies, private hospitals, pharmaceuticals. I asked them a question. Is it really the nature of our lives that everything I must meet them with my class? Because we're always clashing about the rich eye. I said, surely as our Africans, there are some things that can bring us together, all which we don't have to clash all the time. And I said, I've got 2 proposals. Can you work together to reduce the case of HIV, AIDS, and TB? Whether you are in public or private, it affects us. Secondly, I said, can we work together to help build the human capital of this country? We need human beings with skills. Fortunately, they agreed. They came together and they established what is called public health enhancement funds. And they've done very well, so it should be a common thing to me that we are always fighting against the private sector. That is the theme that is developing, I know, that the Minister of Health sees the private sector. I've already been given that fact. I don't. I just mentioned things that are wrong there, and I do that without fear or favor. But when we're working together, I think the public health enhancement fund will be able to collect 40 million rand by now. And it's going to run for 3 years and be reviewed. We said we'll do 3 things with that money. One, can we produce 1,000 PhDs in this country? within a period of 10 years. PhDs that are produced by us now in this period of 10 years. And we started. We started. Quite a number. I think the last time I counted, there were about 8 or so. I don't know whether one of my officials is this man who's a human being. There are already PhDs, and I've heard that most of them are women who took that, and they are being funded from this. Why, how is it different from other scholarships? I was surprised when I found many women taking. And the women told me that, no, this is very convenient for them. Because many of them want to do PhD, but they also want to start families. But they must also work. And then they salary. And they say, you know, balancing those 50 salaries. But with this public health investment fund, paid for by private sector companies, it makes it possible. Why? Because they are giving a salary. We say you, we allocate you 1 million rands. From this month, you will decide whether you want to work a full day, or half a day, or you work part time, to be able to do a PhD, but raise your children at the same time. And we've got a couple of women who are doing that. That PhD is mostly in HIV AIDS and TB research. We now want to expand it as well to them. We want to expand it to regulatory medicine. To get PhDs in people who help us in medicine control council. As you know, we are changing the medicine control council in Sabra. But we also want them to help us. Honorable Mr. James, this is your head subject about the forensic laboratory synthesis, you know, the forensic part, you know, investigators who must test blood for alcohol and all that. Can they also help us? And we believe those 1,000 PhDs in this field can be produced. And the private sector organization signed with us and said after 3 years they will review if there is any impact on that so that they increase their money or change it. So this is already happening. I'm just putting another thing that must not believe that we are in this through and through and through. Part of the money we spent was to train CEOs of hospitals. The last amount, medical students who would not have been admitted to university. Not because they are bad, but because they have been in school under a tree somewhere, with no laboratory, nothing. And he has got capacity, but when they arrive at university, you know their points. There's a point scheme in which they score them. And that particular one is sort of 2 points. And we say if this one attended a school, a better school, he would have scored very high. The private sector, the public health investment fund is prepared to fund them to a tune of 200,000 rand each to get this university so that it gets extra students. We've already put about 100 kids through this system. So I just wanted to clear that part that don't think public health and the sector enemies through and through and through. There are things on which we clash, there's only business and health, but there are things on which you cooperate. SADC GPs, honorable members, let me tell you. Because I don't know how many times I must be. I don't know what's wrong with us South Africans. We really believe with all our hearts that the shortage of doctors is only our problem. In South Africa, it's our pain. Doctors are giving the business model. Honorable members, I attend the World Health Assembly. There's no minister of health on this planet who is not worried about the issue of number of doctors. Even in the rich countries. Even in the United States itself, why should they be recruiting doctors if they are heavy? This would mean the Minister of Health in Canada, you tell you, if it was not for doctors from Africa, would be in trouble. Because all our doctors are going to the United States. Doctors seem to move from the poorest economy to the strongest. Because their facilities, they have everything they are working is there. It happens all around the world. Why is the country like Australia, which is so advanced, recruiting doctors? Why should the Middle East be using oil money to recruit doctors and nurses from all of us? It's a world phenomenon. Why? There is a shortage of 4 million health workers worldwide, even in rich countries. The only country I know which has got a surplus of doctors and sends them anywhere is Cuba. The other countries don't have any surplus, otherwise, why should they be recruiting? Remember that we have to go to Britain to negotiate with them. To take it easy on recruitment in South Africa. And they're obliged when we send them. We said, please, this recruitment is going to kill us. In one common health meeting at the World Health Assembly, I think it was also 2011, when we took this decision to support the Minister of Health in Australia. In the Commonwealth meeting, the African countries were even pushing for a resolution that for every doctor recruited from a developing country, by a developed country, they must pay amount of money equivalent to the amount of money that was spent for seeing. For instance, if the doctor came for 6 years and it cost 1 million, when you receive that doctor, that resolution was disposed by Kenya, and very strongly they said, no, we need to pass that resolution. Unfortunately, it was rejected on the basis that it will be very complex, because we also do have doctors from Europe who come here, and if they demand that we give for them one home. So they said it's not a good resolution. So one resolution was taken that countries must not recruit, must not actively recruit doctors from the developing countries. That's the resolution of the World Health Organization. But this resolution collides head on with another sister organization of the United Nations, the International Labour Organization, ILO. ILO has an opposite resolution. These are all agents of the United Nations. And that resolution says any worker, the judge SO that says whether a doctor or an engineer, domestic worker, has got the right to sell their labor hour all around the world, and that work must not be treated by national borders. Meaning that we go on in the good, left, right, and center. If I give this my labor power, I'm failing, I must not be impeded. Now, that's the nature of the world we live in. And the two resolutions were both passed. One by ministers of health, the other by ministers of labor. And they collide. SADC has got a resolution about us in South Africa. That does not support. It's a cross of all actually. We're not supposed to actively recruit doctors for SADC because we are stronger economy, but just come. The problem is that they are here and we are not recruiting them. So we are hiring them. Then there was also an argument by the Minister of Foreign Affairs. They said, what is why? If SADC, which is South Africa, must not recruit doctors from SADC, but the European countries recruit them, is it not better that they are in South Africa than in Europe? That debate went on. It's a very difficult one. But this year, I was attending a SADC meeting of ministers of health in Victoria Falls. I was under attack because the regime was still their specialist. Because they said they are many specialists all over SADC and they all come to South Africa. And I have to tell them, I don't see those specialists. They go to private hospitals, not to me. They are not being attended by me, but they are attacked by strong private hospitals in South Africa. But the minister saying, please stop. What is the use of having specialists as poor countries and they all come to South Africa? Those problems are not yet resolved. They are problems of the world. Honorable members, I just wanted to know that when you say we must go to SADC to get GPs and all that, nobody wants to use a single doctor. And that's why there are all these resolutions. Honorable James, everything you said about infrastructure is very good. And I'm in trouble. I know two institutions. This one over here, this one was built for 8 years, this one was built for 10 years, this one is the strongest. You are aware that I'm in trouble every time any one of you here sit down and think what they can ask me. And the way Chimbali Metal Hospital comes there again, I'm always in trouble. Because of the men that have happened there, we're pushing for everything, all this and all that. This is the problem that I'm facing, Honorable Sage. When you meet MECs for help, they will tell you, no, this problem is in public works, it's not with us. Everybody knows the problem that public works departments are experiencing all over. Now, I'm in trouble as hell, because the Auditor General has done something that was never done before. And I think it started 2 years ago. Usually, they were auditing problems on infrastructure. They are now auditing the Minister of Health, because they say this money is from you. You must be able to follow up the money and the clinic and all these processes. That's what the Auditor General is doing. And I'm saying, but I've got no authority. You are giving me responsibility without authority, because that's what it is. A lot of responsibilities put on my shoulders. Anything goes wrong, Minister, you are responsible. But the authority to do it is not there. That is why in the pilot, I tried to convince the guy, please give us this cash in kind to give us authority. Because otherwise we are naked, we don't have any authority. But we have as it may, Honorable James, we have put up a structure at the national level to try and look into this issue problems. If they start the finish now, and they finish with you, if you check the slide where I was showing OR coming, I showed where I was showing the any building OR Campbell. are actually showing the starting time and the finish time. And we are trying to push the province to do something like that. Yes. That must start on this time. The completion date must be put here, the duration, the progress we must be there. We are going to use this method the same way. And what was not happening, honorable members, which we fought this public works about, is to charge a contractor if they do a wrong thing. Yes, contracts were just issued. Whether a contractor finishes in 10 years or 5 years, they were never charged. And we said, unless they are charged, unless there are consequences, they will never stop doing this type of thing. We must just touch them and say, you were supposed to finish in this month. That's why if you live there, I think it's on here. Here. Our engineer on this clinic in the OR Kambo, he says, far behind schedule with termination letter first, but contractor now provides a turnaround plan. That means the moment we realize this contractor is behind schedule, we serve them with a letter that we are going to terminate. And this contractor was supposed to come up with a turnaround strategy. In the past, this was never happening. They were just giving them, they will finish their own time. And they should. They always overshoot. When you take a long time to finish a building, there's no way you overshoot the expenditure. So we tend to do that, but unfortunately, I'm repeating, we are doing this without a lot of authority. When you ask many MCs, they say we are also in trouble because of this issue. The mid-level workers, yes, honorable Mr. James, we this process was started wrongly. Mid-level workers were trained for the first time in Water Sisulu University, followed by them. But unfortunately, within the health checks in the human resource section, they did not actually plan for them. We are only starting the place now that they are there. They changed and there was an agreement. There was not even a placement that they are going to fall at this level, this will be their salary. Those things were not worked out when we are starting to work them out. It was a very serious business, but this type of thing has happened many times in the past. Honorable Holding, to revise the 14-year clock of NHR, when the white paper comes out, we are going to recognize that we divided NHI into 3 phases. The first 5 years is the preparation phase, which is coming to an end now. These preparations I'm talking about. The second phase is to put up structures, the distance, the payment systems, etc. And then the last 4 years will be to establish the NHI itself in a way that meets us in that way. That's how we've divided it. Whether we're able to meet that timeline, I think it will be reviewed time and again. Again, South Africans, mainly because in Kwadesa we did what was called a miracle, we believe we can always do miracles. You know, this thing is complex. When our soldiers in Qatar, they are going to take any 18 months to implement an HR, I said, is it because they are rich? Is it because they are not very fit? Is it because it's a small population? I had to go there to see. Why are you taking only 18 months? We said we are going to take 14 years. And I went to ask the minister, and he said, hey, minister, we started discussing this thing from 1992. Don't think we started yesterday. The whole concept of bringing universal health coverage in Qatar started in 1992. So don't think you just woke up from 1992. We've been waiting behind the scenes to plan these things. Not a small thing. You know, so I just want people to understand that it's not just a fact movie that you can wake up, because this is a revolution, actually. That's why the Lancet called it the tech transition in health. They are arguing that healthcare in the world, since human beings populated this planet, has gone through 2 transitions. This is going to be the third one. The first transition, which they call a democratic transition, they started in the 18th century when the world introduced clean running water sanitation. Humanity has changed forever for the better. Clean running water, sanitation, sewerage, it changed human beings. That was the first transition. The second transition, which they call an epidemiological transition, was immunization. When you start immunizing people to stop diseases, you know, bringing an end to smallpox that are about to bring an end to polio, etc. They said the best transition will come in the world when we introduce universal health coverage. And if it's done successfully, it will change the world, the face of the world in healthcare. And that's how important this whole thing is. That brings the issue of lack of confidence in the healthcare system. Yes, it's true. We know the only one when there was no confidence, when any child has, because people don't know what it is. You can look at America. The Obamacare is being taken to court left, right, and center because people are not very certain. So we believe that the United Nations passes it and say the whole world must follow it. Maybe the debate will be much better. The question from Honorable Musala about any child grant. I must confess, this issue you ask here is part of our debate with specialists. If you say this national health insurance, the word national, how much do you divide up again into provinces when you give the finances and the grant? When you say this is national, can't we change some of these laws? Some of them, and people say, no, we want centralizing. No. In the NHI document, we are going to show you we want strong decentralization to districts. Very strong. But we don't want provinces to act like other national states. We don't want that. Because it's a big problem. And I can give you an example. The College of Medicine in 2010 came to me and said, Minister, we have got vacancies to train 1,000 specialists in this country. And we are short of specialists. Universities can train 1,000 specialists now. But we are unable to do so because to train as a specialist in health, unlike other fields like law, engineering, the province must create the register schools at the level of the province and the hospital. There must be a push of the register. Otherwise, the university won't hear you. They won't hear you because you have to have a ward. You must own a ward and lead it. That's where the training is going to be. And we found that there was a gap of thousands. I went to the Minister of Finance, Minister Brian Gordon, and explained to him. He understood. He understood very well. And he gave us 600 million rand to train 1,000 specialists. But treasury officials said, Minister, in terms of dollar, we must send these to provinces as part of their equitable share. And they insisted, showed me dollar and what you guys in Parliament are saying in response. And that money was sent as equitable share to provinces. Up to today, I don't know where that money is. It was not stolen. But in terms of dollar, when money arrives at equitable share in a province, the provincial executives got the right to decide what they must do with that money. It's not me who decides. And if they decide that, no, this thing called register, we don't know what it is. You know, what are here, the finish we're doing for water or for housing. They'll send that money there. These are some of the problems that we want to change, and we will try to show to pressure that if these things must be meaningful, if the white people must change them, and say we must change the way in which we are doing things, because this is a shared transition. We can no longer do things like we did in the past. That's why we tie with pressure this issue of cash in grants. Can we be able as a Department of Health nationally put up a clinic in a hospital in the pilot district without using the old method and let the money come to us? We are, this is an experiment we are doing and we believe it will be successful. Although, when we sleep once, they are heavy on us. I've been told many times that we have not spent this money of interest grant for 2 years. But 2 years, we never spent money for infrastructure for 21 years. When I'm trying something new for 2 years, why am I being judged? For 21 years, we're not successful. But we can see, as I showed you here, that there is no progress. And I can guarantee you, yes, it took us a long time. In the first 2 years, we were shaking because we were shaking up structures. Now we said them, we are able to do this on our own. And believe you me, these things that we are putting here, we are going to follow this problem, which in the past was not followed. This. Because it's a new thing. We have to try it. Otherwise, why then are we talking about the new scheme if we can't try that? The ideal thing is, Honorable Chiwan, about X-rays. It's not only X-rays. The whole concept of NHI means a total reorganization of the healthcare system. You can't do NHI under the present system. It's not going to fly. You're going to completely reorganize it. Completely. It must be a new thing altogether. And that in that reorganization, you're going to look at things like this. Can all clinics have X-rays? Or can you put one X-ray unit at the end and say it's 10 clinics? Can you do the same about laboratories? You can't have laboratories in all clinics, but what service module are you going to have? We have also had an essential equipment. Previously, the country has only an essential meeting list. Now we've got an essential equipment list, which tells us what equipment do you need at what level of care. In the past, it was either run, you go to a clinic, these doctors who were efficient go to clinic, they'll say, I'll arrive at the clinic and ask a simple thing like an ophthalmoscope, it's not there. That's the simplest thing. Or even a blood pressure machine, it's not there. You know, so we can't go on like that. We need a complete organization. This thing must be standard. The issue of primary health care seems that will make a change. Honorable, Chuan, look, this is a game changer. That's why if you look at CZN, what has been the game changer in the ban on HIV? Is the problem with the biggest burden of HIV is, but when it came to marital transmission, is the one that reduced more than any problem. Completely. Why? Exactly the issues you are talking about. They took all these primary health care workers which I've mentioned, whether they are in municipalities, in social development, NGO, they put them together under the premier police in a process called Suku Masai. That thing has changed KZN, whereby in every ward, the ward council are bringing people together, regardless of which party it comes from. If you see KZN sitting, during the additional aid council, you see something that's marvelous. The mayor of that municipality, the premier will be sharing the chairperson of aid council. The mayor will give a report about maternal mortality, child mortality, the number of people who are now on ARVs, the number who did medical transition, those who have put up community gardens. You know, all that process is given by the mayor. And the Department of Health, if it's in there to confirm or to challenge or mention, that's what they've been doing. And each district has got an ADC who's their champion, who will say, I visited that district, I know about this. This Suku Masai was so powerful that it attracted the United Nations. The Executive Secretary of the United Nations went to KwaZulu-Natal, took this Suku Masai, he packaged it into a model, and came back and gave it that time with the president and Khalema Mutanzi. And said the rest of Africa must use this model because it makes a change. That's why you move communities from primary health care. Not only using clinics and hospitals, you are using everybody because in this Suku Masai, you find ministers of religion, you find traditional leaders, you find counselors, you find everybody regardless of their past political affiliation sitting down. They even bring journalists, especially from the SABC, and say, you, in the SABC, you've been advertising this thing about HIV, you are destroying the population, can you stop? They discuss them there, in the Suku Masai meetings, and that's why we want to follow this model. So since that time, under SANA, we've agreed that all provinces must follow Suku Masai, and we have a deputy president to follow them up. Tend us in healthcare. Yes. This is a big problem, and somebody mentioned here procurement. Let me tell you, Harvard University has organized lecture called Leadership in Health. They do it every year for the past 3 years now, where they call ministers of health from Africa, from the Far East, and Latin America. We all go to Harvard every year. They even go to the World Health Assembly to do this lecture there, to try and enhance leadership. Because in the website of the World Organization, will tell you that a healthcare system has got 6 building blocks. The first one is leadership and governance. And that's what Harvard is trying to do. They've even established what they call Harvard Global Health System Institute. And they went to get a professor from London who tropical medicine and hygiene to share that. In June, when we were there, he said the flu in all the countries in Africa, the Far East and Latin America. What makes healthcare systems substandard in those countries? Why this is they are underdeveloped, their healthcare system is not like in Europe, etc. And they identified three things. They said there are three things that are common to all the countries. Number one, human resources. The planning, the development and management of human resources. We found one in all the countries whose healthcare systems are struggling. Number two, procurement, as the tenders we are talking about. And number three, supply chain. And they said all the countries in Africa, Latin America,
and the father is, if they can improve this trend, their healthcare systems will improve. When we see the ideal things method, that's laparoscopy. The three things were identified. Away from Harvard, completely away from Harvard. In that ideal clinic model, we said if a clinic was the ideal, there are eight things that have been identified. It was infrastructure, it was human resources, it was procurement, financial management, waiting times was added, etc., etc. So these things are already known. The question is, are we able to do something about them? That's where the issue of authority comes in. Because, for instance, somebody here mentioned, you mentioned the issue of ministers taking registry in the appointment of MECs. Forget about that, the person South African money. It can't happen. MECs are chosen by premiums, and it is there. But my worry is the other officials.
Yes.
Where you have a notion of who must be an HOD and all that. And some of them who have been chosen are taken from me. You know that this person cannot perform. The next moment you wake up, you see the province, you see the whole province. And you know. You are sitting here, you are waiting with the tenants, but you have got no authority on that issue. You can't do anything. Because in terms of the constitution, director generals are chosen by the president. HODs in province are chosen by the premiers. That is the weakness of our system is having. So I know, and I'm not trying to grab that power. I know some people who were not supposed to be HODs who have been so. And I'm sitting here crying. Because I know these are not going to work well there. And when they don't work bad, you all point fingers at me. What is that minister doing? What is he saying? Well, I'm not from the flesh that this thing is not going to work. But the question doesn't allow me to do anything. Sometimes you even go and ask and say, no, please, this must not happen. But you don't know the political dynamics in that province of how they use people and all that. You are not part of it. And they go on to do it and give you the people. You must need to finish. That's the weakness of our system. And so, I know that HR is important. Harvard has told me so. That if you don't win on HR, and the World Organization has told me so, that if you don't win on the first building block, leadership and governance, succeed about all the others. Okay, it's not going to work. Because the second is on the building blocks, is medicines and the facial medicines and other commodities, health information system, the web. But if at the top the own leadership and governance were failed, the rest is going to collapse like a deck of cards. Unfortunately, that's what is happening in our country. Now, in NHI, the question is, are we going to allow that kind of a system where we become a center of state within one country, even where we see that there are problems? The issue of security. You mentioned the issue of security in hospitals. You are aware that it's one of our core standards. But I don't want people to believe this thing started yesterday. When our medical students, and I'm not saying I'm finishing it, but I'm telling you the reality. When I was a medical student, we used to listen to stories of people who have passed, who have got to do this and she, in some Gauteng hospitals, like in Bila Hospital. They used to give us stories. How a doctor has to sit at that time, guns were not legalized. They'll tell you how you should get with an MC wanting you to defend yourself. Because you could be attacked any time. That's why we needed security. They will tell you that. That will get all sorts of people who are drunk. Now these days, there will be people who are smoking, who are no longer, who are classified human beings simply because they've got two eyes and two legs, but their behavior is something out of this world. They are all going to our healthcare facilities. So what we need to do is to strengthen security systems afresh and anew, and I agree with that. You are aware that I was worried. Why Dr. Mshiri was shooting in a shooting in Mpumalanga? That was a whole problem. And when he investigated something terrible, I wanted to know that security company, because it's a health security company. Who has it hired? And I found that the MEC for health doesn't even know. Because the system is that security of hospitals is hired by CBT and security, not health. So the MEC said, no, I don't know that company. I don't know who they are. I have nothing to do with it. Go and ask the MEC for CBT and security. When you ask the MEC for CBT and security, they don't even know where the hospital is. But they have procured a liquidity company for them. Why is that happening? They'll tell you, no, it's a decision from our province. And we went further to look. Who are these people who are buying hospitals? Some of the security companies are cheating. They give these people very little money. When they demand more money, they just get rid of them and hire another one on the street. A few months of hospitals told me, Minister, we are scared. I'm guarded by people I don't even know. I don't even know whether I will give you some of the emails she posted during the night. I'm not even know whether I'm saying. Because when you go to the company to find out who they hired, you don't know. Every day you meet new people, you meet new faces here. That is why we're asking, can this security be ensured? And when that is done, people are saying, no, we are moving the wrong ideology now. This is not the way of hospices. These are the problems that we are meeting every day. In hospices like Barra, they've done something abnormal because of this law. That security company must be tendered to be outsourced. They said in the world, they hired their own in-source security. In the perimeter, that they hired these outside companies. Because they don't succeed in the world. You can't be guided by people you don't know. Who don't owe allegiance, because when they look for money from their employer, who's on the stage, the employer runs away. Some of these people, if I can give you the money, they teach people. You'll say, I make the security company, that is in half a million rand from the stage, every month. It has hired 33 people. But their total salary bill is 109,000 rand. We give them half a million. They pay the staff 109,000, staff of 53. Divide and realize that they are in about 1,500. So where is the money going to? It's going to this person who owns this company. We are not being helped, but the worker is not also earning anything. This is a problem we are faced with and we want to change that. Honorable Justice.
I would request that would be the more or less the last response in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, no, not enough. Honorable Master, you don't have to identify any learner who wants to do medicine. It's just that I didn't bring the legal figures here. I don't like getting my life to the figures. The number of people who apply to do medicine here are 100 times more than what the universities can see. They are mean. If you go to CG and they review the number of applications, people believe we can solve that by providing private medical schools. I don't believe so. We have to rebuild medical schools in the country, and that's our problem. That's why we are forced to send so many students to Cuba. Why? Because as a country, we didn't play. Cuba is a country of 11 million people, but they have 27 medical schools. We are a country of 51 million people. We have got 8 medical schools, the last of which we have built 8 years ago. For the whole 8 years, we have built 10 new medical schools. And our plan is to start. Students who want to do medicine are overrunned. We don't have recruits. There are many every year. And the daily medicine. An issue of OR Tambo is one of you. You are right. I spent 3 days in July in OR Tambo. I addressed all the ministers of religion, the chiefs, and all counselors, regardless of which political party they belong to, about NHI, I took them through the system, and they took a decision that they will form a task team. We have chosen an NHI coordinator who will work with them on that task team. That they will do a task team of ministers of religion, counselors, regardless of which party they belong to, and traditional leaders to drive this process. And I'm very happy about that. I'm going to check. I told the coordinator who hired by her that I'm giving you 8 weeks to come up with that structure that must have worked in that area. The issue of chronic medicine is important. I'm very happy. The establishment of establishment records, if I understand you, or whatever we are talking about the organogram.
Yes.
This is wrong. The organogram is important. Let me tell you what it means. Throughout the ages, the World Organization was using population figures to determine the number of doctors and nurses. We say you need one doctor to 10,000 population, or one to 35,000 people. That was the formula that was used. Now, we don't know, if you go to a province and they give you the organogram and say to a sort of 20 doctors, when you ask them how they arrive there, there's no answer. A good example is what happened in 2013, if you remember, at George Malaga Hospital, where babies died and the whole country was in a frenzy. And the MEC rushed to the media and said it's because they are short of 38 doctors. And the province is short of 2,000 doctors. Unless they get them, there will be problems. The media said to me, minister, does it mean you are going to allow babies to die? Because you don't want to give the province 2,000 doctors and George Malaga Hospital 38 doctors. I choose 3 specialists, 3 senior specialists in pediatrics who went to that hospital. And the report was this hospital was more doctors than it ever needs. In fact, must keep some away. This is not a problem. That time we're using about 17 doctors. They said 10 doctors came out of hospital. Anyway, so we asked, where is the lady coming from? They said it's going to Ogamogram. Who do the Ogamogram? Nobody knows. But it's there. And we're supposed to fill in the job. So this is wrong. And the one that I see realize that they've come up with a new system called WISEN. Work in the digital for sponsoring starting normally. This is a mathematical formula which looks at some of the things you say. The disease. Because if you say you need one doctor for 10,000 people, what if it's 10,000 people who are well to do who never get seen most of the time? And what if that population has got only 100 people who are sick almost every hour? So that question is a new mathematical formula that looks at the level of disease, the health-seeking behavior of that, the ruralities of that population, the demographics, you know, and the wealth and all that. It's a very complex formula. We have used that formula for the past 3 years silently. We've gone to all the clinics in the country. We've determined their wives and stuff. We are now in hospitals, which is very complex. But for all the clinics, meaning if you go to any clinic in the country, I can throw away the organogram of the department and show in terms of wives, this is what we need. We agree with treasury, the moment we finish that, we'll hand it over to treasury. Every moment, when they do their human resources, they must do it according to WISEN. But let me tell you, it's going to take a lot of time before we reach there. Because it is changing the pattern, changing everything that we've been doing. But as of now, we've got the game plan. We know what means. WISEN will tell you, you need a doctor here. No, you don't need a doctor to see me. You need a pharmacist. No, you need a pharmacy. No, you need a psychologist. No, you don't. WISEN will show you all those things. The complex part is the hospital, especially the Shari hospital. That's where we are now. The president of that aggression in the province is honorable member. Forget about them. They are meaningless. If we follow them, we will do, we'll commit a lot of mistakes like we nearly destroyed Marcelo Hospital. To give them more doctors when they don't want them. The problem was management, not the number of doctors.
Thank you, thank you, honorable minister. I think it's quite clear to all of us that health matters that really need dedication, focus, and time. And that is why I want to do something that we said do in the community that on the 2nd of September, we are going to have a continuation of course. There are some questions that have not been asked. But in between that, we know as members that we will request you to send written replies to members for that right also to check with you on that. But on the 2nd of September, we will still have a continuation of this debate and in response on the National Health Insurance. So I want, as we be here, in particular your office, to note that on the 2nd of September, we're having a portfolio committee, we're not having a committee next week, but on the 2nd of September, we're having a portfolio committee. Among others, this will be top in our agenda to finish it off. And we will send a formal invitation. So your office must note that. Honorable members, thank you very much for patience and for our guests. We know that health issues are emotive by its nature, but it really means that the minister says to be united, irrespective of who private political parties, because it affects everybody, irrespective of that. With that, thank you very much. Those that are traveling safe home, we'll keep in touch with one another. Thank you very much.